and book signing with Michael A. Gould-Wartofsky on Thursday, November 12th at the Q Center in Portland. The book traces the occupation of Zuccotti Park and some of its counterparts across the United States and around the world, from inception to eviction. Even if the movement fails to achieve radical reform, Gould-Wartofsky maintains its offshoots may well accelerate the pace of change in the United States in the years to come. Again, that's The Occupiers, a reading and book signing with Michael A. Gould-Wartofsky, Thursday, November 12th, at the Q Center, 4115 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Time is 11:29. Let's just say the time is 11:30 a.m. on KBOO Portland. Yeah. Coming up on the inimitable and the incomparable Radio Zine, we hear from Ashley Haight, Ruth Oliver, and Sarah Merck from the 9th Annual Siren Nation Festival Women's Visual Arts, Spoken Arts, and Music. Right now, KBOO's own Aaron Yankee will tell us more.
The 9th Annual Siren Nation Festival opened last Wednesday and continues through November 15th with visual arts, spoken arts, workshops, music, and more. Siren Nation is a unique arts organization that works throughout the year, but the Siren Nation Festival is their signature event. We'll speak with Ashley Haight, Ruth Oliver, and Sarah Merck about the festival, opportunities for women artists, and the creation of a Siren Nation year-round. Stay tuned.
My name is Ashley Haight, and I'm one of the board members of Siren Nation and producer of the storytelling event, The Broadcast. I actually joined the board in January. I'm not that familiar with all of the history of Siren Nation, but I know that December Carson has been there, one of the founders. So she's amazing, and she leads our board meetings now. I was introduced to it by a friend of mine, Beth Olson, who's also a board member. We were out one night. She was like, "You're all about stuff that empowers women. You're a feminist, and you're, you know, you do all this cool stuff. And how do you not know about Siren Nation? And you have to, you know, join us." And so I did. And I saw some of the workshops last year were like the burlesque and funding creativity and how to do your taxes when you're an artist. So I was just really inspired by that. And after that, I wanted to be a part of it.
I'm Ruth Oliver. I'm also on the board for Siren Nation, and I often act as MC at our events. I feel like I just hang out and do whatever I can to pitch it, and I sort of host the rehearsal for the broadcast and so that we can get together and talk about our stories. Siren Nation is about promoting women in the arts, all of the arts, and, you know, we touch as many as we can, and we're always looking for additional areas to fill out. Right now, I know we'd love to hear from some dance companies that would like to get involved with Siren Nation. We have comedy, the storytelling. This is only our second event doing that. We're both kind of storytelling geeks. I think you're actually a bigger geek than I am.
Well, I studied folklore and as a master's degree, so,
yeah,
so I do hold a lot of geek status, but I'm okay with it.
And get a different perspective and also be supportive of each other in that environment. Not that women are better, but we're just awesome. We do events throughout the year that then go to fund this event. Probably some of your listeners have seen the Dolly Parton show or the Billie Holiday tribute night. We also have the Paint Your Art Out, which is a big, very inclusive show of artists that goes out and
do a lot of art shows. That's really great. One thing about Siren Nation is that they're really open to people coming in with new ideas of things that they want to do. Like another one of the storytellers at the broadcast in May is an actress, Kimberly Diane Wilson. And she has a play through the Portal Theater with a bunch of other amazing women called No Bells. So we think we're going to try and bring that back as one of our 2016 events. It's an amazing play about women scientists.
Who probably should have won the Nobel Prize.
And I'm Sarah Merck. I have been to Siren Nation before, and I spoke at the event last year. It was great, and I participated in the storytelling night. I told a story. It's a really great way to find out about new artists, and especially new musicians. Every time I see a poster for Siren Nation, I see names that I don't recognize, and I want to find out about them. So it's a great festival for highlighting women who you might not hear enough from or whose work doesn't get that much support. It's a great way to find out about new artists as a listener. I find a lot of great art through Siren Nation, and I'm grateful for that.
Seems like there's not that much separation between the festival and what Siren Nation does year-round, which is pretty different because when people have signature events like festivals, you don't really hear about them throughout the year. So why a festival?
The festival, one of the amazing things about it is we get a chance to take some of the funds that we've gathered through some of the other events and put on this great day at the Kennedy School where we have all those free workshops. And there's an art and craft sale going on that features women, artisans, designers, you know, everything from beautiful handmade jewelry to soaps. And you have that whole day. And then we have are featuring like so many different amazing musicians and the comedy. Amy Miller is such a big part of it this year, too.
Yeah, she'll be hosting both the comedy night and then also the broadcast evening, the storytelling. The difference between the events throughout the year are that the earlier events were featuring mostly local artists and people at every level. Paint Your Art Out has beginning artists. It has artists who are mid-career. There are people who do shows internationally. There's a place for everyone. The same is true in the musical events. You know, you'll have a couple of years ago at the Dolly show, we had an act that were a couple of established musicians and then like a 9-year-old girl singing with them. So, you know, just very different. These events in the festival, they're really putting some sponsorship behind people who maybe they've moved up and people see them all over the nation or internationally. We're just saying, hey, do you know about this person? Because they're hot. And you want to keep an eye out. And like you said, Sarah, I mean, I found people like Natasha Cometto last November. She just blew me away.
She's a local musician, right?
Yeah, she does live here, yeah.
I love her work.
So I do think that's a big difference is that here in this festival, in addition to all these fantastic workshops, we're also kind of pointing out, hey, take a look at this rising star.
Up next, we'll hear a little audio from Jet Black Pearl.
I found a beautiful language at the street market in town. It's got big shoulders, full fur inside, and the leather shiny brown. The leather shiny brown. Its pockets are filled with speeches that I listen to each day. I don't really get their meaning, but their rhythm makes me sway. Their rhythm makes me sway. The strong zippers joining, chains of exotic words that twitter like a flock of tropical wild birds. Tropical wild birds. A scarf of hand-spun lyrics swirls around my head, scribbling secret poems that never will be read, that never will be read. The large cuffs are linked with letters stitched by hand. Every time I open them, I think of my homeland. I think of my homeland. Ooh. 'Cause underneath this language I wear a little song that keeps me warm and feels so soft. It's my mother tongue. It's my mother tongue.
That was Jet Black Pearl, who will be part of the broadcast storytelling night on November 11th under the name Jetty Swart. Ruth Oliver and Ashley Haight now talk about the workshops that will take place at this year's festival on November 15th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the McManamans Kennedy School Gym.
This is the 9th festival, and I think that workshops have always been a part of it.
I'm really excited for the one about doing your own podcast.
There's a panel of people that are doing them. And then we have an earthquake preparedness workshop. We're going to have a coloring lounge.
There's an aromatherapy one where you can, I think, mix your own scents and things like that.
You get to walk away with a little
person.
Piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are a lot more.
There are.
How do you decide what gets in the workshop?
Beth Olson and Ashley Brittner were our workshop coordinators this year, and they reached out to a bunch of different people, but people that were available and excited to be here were either small business owners or, you know, artists in one way or another that just really felt called to Siren Nation and what we do.
I think there are 5 to 7 workshops. If you go to sirennation.org, you'll be able to see all of them.
For the storytelling event, Sarah, you performed in the last one.
Yep, it was great.
What was different as a performer about it?
I am on stage a lot. I was really nervous to do this. I always get nervous getting on stage, even if it's something I do a lot. I just always get anxious about it. And the crowd could not have been more supportive. I could just feel when I was about to get on stage that, like, everybody there was rooting for me. And that whatever I did, they were excited about who I was and what I was doing. It felt really, really nice to be on stage and to feel just sort of that warmth from the crowd. I think that's really different than a lot of storytelling events where you're on stage and you can't really feel the audience that much. And instead, in this case, it felt like a whole room full of supportive people who were just excited about me being there at all.
We'll now hear a short snippet from Sarah Merck at the Broadcast Storytelling Night, May 25th, 2015, featuring women telling true stories about their best failures.
It turned out I had been hired for a canvassing job, going door to door and knocking on doors, asking for money to save the environment. The campaign that summer was stopping coal-fired power plants in Oregon and Northwest. And when I got there, I didn't really know what the job was, but I was arrogant or proud of myself that I was like, whatever, I can do any job. I'll be the best at it, you know? And so, like, the group that was hired with me when I got there, it wasn't just me, apparently, who'd been hired on this day, but there was, like, 25 people who'd been hired on the same day as me. And they were, in my eyes, like, a really motley crew, you know? I thought of them as, like, kind of like dirty hippies. And I was like, I don't know what this job is, but I'm going to be the best at it. So I get a list of 100 doors to go knock on somewhere in Portland. They drive you out there. You're dropped off in the neighborhood. And then you and this clipboard and your little spiel about ending coal-fired power plants in the Northwest. And you just go up to a stranger's door and you knock on it. And then when they come to you, you ask them for money, you know. And the first door said no, and the second door said no. And it very quickly became apparent that they did not care what my SAT scores were, you know. They did not care how smart I thought I was. To them, I was just a stranger on their door asking them for money, which no. And so throughout the day, there's a level of increasing desperation, right? Because in addition to the job being to go and ask strangers for money, you have a quota. Your quota is $86 a day. And I don't know if it's still like this, but when I was 17 and I was hired there, if you missed your quota the first day, you had to work on Saturday. If you missed your quota the second day, you were fired. So for 2 days in a row, you can't get people to give you $86, you're fired. And so at first I would be pretty okay knocking on doors. And by the time it got to like 4 p.m., 5 p.m., 6 p.m., I was more desperate, more anxious. And I was pretty lucky. I would get $86 most of the days. And we'd get back to the place and we would count up the money. And it was so hard. It was so hard. But I still, you know, the other people that did it, they, if you're able to do it for more than a month or two, you're really good at it. As I was, I kind of looked down on them because, I mean, I was 17 and they were like 23, 24, 25, ancient to me, you know. They were into bands I had never heard of, like Everclear. And they, like, I thought of them as like hard partying types because they would go out and get a drink after work. And it got to be where by the maybe the fourth week or so of just this routine of like you're handed a clipboard with 100 names and then you're bussed out to like, let's say Lake Oswego or Tigard or Sandy. Just dropped off there and then you go and you knock on every door. And you're kind of trying to judge it by the bumper stickers on the cars, like, are they going to give me money? I don't know. And then it was like constant people telling you that they didn't want to talk to you, and nobody wanted to talk to you during the day. And maybe like by the time I got to like my fourth week, halfway through my shift, I would usually just sit on the curb and start crying for a while. And then because I didn't feel like I had another option, I would go back and knock on the rest of the doors.
Sarah Merck.
And I also think that the host, Amy Miller, who was sort of MC'd the night, she's just such a good host. And she could really roll with all the different changes. And I think that's something that really set it apart, too, from other storytelling nights and other events, is just like having Amy on stage be able to make a joke about something you just said or ask you a smart question about something you just said. She just like lit up the room, I think.
Yeah, I agree. She does the once a month talk show at Helium.
I love her talk show.
Yeah. It's a stand up for yourself.
It's called Stand Up for Yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
She combined that with just, so it wasn't just her being an MC after everyone told their stories, and then she would interview them a little bit. It made everyone in the audience feel even more invested in the storytellers. So it was really great.
I always want that after every comedy show because people go on stage and they tell jokes and I'm like, but who are you?
Yeah.
So I love the way that she approaches that with asking people questions about themselves.
Mm-hmm. And if we're really lucky, then maybe Amy will tell another story.
Oh, yeah. She's the best.
She's clearly a totally impressive, amazing talent. But I do think also that there is something about Siren Nation that would bring it out in her and bring it out in the audience and bring it out in the storytellers. So,
right. Well, there's a reason why Amy's associated with Siren Nation. It's awesome. Her show is called Stand Up for Yourself. That's a lot about what Siren Nation is like. Hey, look at these fantastic things these women are doing. Support it, you know. But also, we set out to make the broadcast a little different in that we're having a rehearsal with the storytellers before, as opposed to the moth night where everyone's drawn out of a hat.
And it can feel more nerve-wracking, I think.
And we all got together and tried it out, and our audience being each other, all the other storytellers. That takes some of the nerves out of it and also lets you know, hey, everybody's nervous. It's not just you. We're all kind of worried about how we're going to be perceived. You know, are we going to somehow mess it up? It's kind of hard to mess up your own story, you know? It's your story, right? That had a lot to it. And I think just the support of the speakers mm-hmm. for each other, the storytellers.
It felt like we were creating a community. Yeah. And I think that you can feel that at the event. Energy, yes. Like you were saying, the crowd just being really receptive. And Siren Nation, to me, just seems like an incubator of this powerful feminine energy that we're just trying to just blow out into the whole world. And there's so much negativity about, like, you know, women getting abused or getting not paid as much as men or not treated with respect in the world. And I want people to be informed about that and pay attention to it. But I also think doing something really positive with art and music and theater and comedy and storytelling, if we can replace all the negative stories stories happening with some more positivity, that's a totally different approach.
I definitely agree with that, and I think that's really powerful to both. Pretty much every day of my life, I'm wandering around thinking about all the horrible things in the world. And so it's nice to have a time to recognize really great things and to celebrate them. I was on a panel a couple of years ago with, I don't think I knew anybody else on the panel. It was all like Portland media makers in some way. I keep seeing those people around and they keep still doing stuff. And I'm so excited to know them now. And they're just a group of people who were kind of quietly, I feel like, doing their own thing and making their own stuff. And wouldn't often like get up in front of people and celebrate it and talk about it and be proud of it in that way, to take time away from working really hard to change the world and step back and say, hey, I'm proud of something I made and let's celebrate it for a second. I was excited to be part of that, where it's a good chance to sort of reflect on goodness.
This is actually a really radical perspective shift on feminism and just the way we talk about ourselves in public. We're so used to giving props to other people mm-hmm. and really supporting, but to be very supportive of each other as we're all doing this, and to be able to say we're awesome, because in this society, I say I'm awesome, and then that makes me have a big target, and people are like, oh, well, you think you're so awesome. And right. But you are creating a space and a culture where it's not a target. It's like, oh, you are awesome. I am going to check you out. I am going to see what you're doing. It's that like second layer. We're all in it together, and we're creating not just the space in this workshops and in these nights, but giving people a sense of how it could feel to live in the world, which is so different than how it actually feels to live in the world most of the time.
I come from an improvisational theater background, and one of the first lessons is, to any suggestion, you give a yes and. Siren Nation is that way. You were saying how much suggestions are appreciated and taken seriously, and that's what happens at those meetings, is there's a listening and a yes and, we could do this, and yes and. And then the energy builds, and it's exciting and it's wonderful to be a part of. And I feel like when you come to Siren Nation events, you get to be a part of that. As you said, last year you came and now you're on working with us on the board. And yeah. It's a very inclusive environment.
We work hard to put on these events, and we are all volunteers, but it's so rewarding.
It is.
Like, to walk around, the first broadcast was in May, and I had so many people like thank me and say how much fun they had and how amazing they thought it was. That felt so great that yeah. they got what we were trying to do and it actually worked.
And the storytellers too. I felt like the connections they were able to make with people from different backgrounds that maybe they never would have met, you know, mm-hmm. felt really good.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too at this point. Sarah and I were at a journalism conference, and there was a lot of focus on changing a lot of the focus from statistics into storytelling. Mm. One of the dangers of that is like, oh, here's a story, and it's nice and neat, and now you don't have to actually worry about this issue, because mm-hmm. here was this, like, one very nice happy ending. Because you have this live interaction with the audience, and like you were saying, some of the stuff didn't work out very well. These are how these things actually shape us. Most of the stories were like, this was a failure in the moment, and this is how it like really made me grow, and I really can appreciate mm-hmm. it. It was nice to not turn away from like, life is also difficult and it's not yeah. tidy. The theme this time is...
Feels like the first time. One story may involve some nudity.
Yes.
Maybe that's obvious.
One of our storytellers will be talking about her first time auditioning for a rock band.
By the way, it is on Wednesday, November 11th. Starts at 8 p.m. at the Secret Society. It's $10 in advance, $12 at the door. We have, of course, as we mentioned, Amy Miller as our MC. Do you want to talk about Yeti?
Yeti, she is from Amsterdam. She plays the accordion and tells stories and sings and writes outrageous, almost surreal lyrics at times. She is quite a performer. She's a very interesting human being, and she lives here in Portland. She moved here about 2 years ago.
And her musician name is Jet Black Pearl, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We also have Anna Magruder. She's been involved with Siren Nation for a long time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's been on the arts committee, and she selects the artwork for Paint Your Art Out. She works in oil. She recently had a big exhibit. She was given a grant to do a series on historical figures in Portland and Oregon.
She's an artist. She's amazing. We also have Jamandria Harris, who is a Black and queer femme poet, multimedia artist, activist, and mother in Portland. And she's on the board of In Other Words. And our last storyteller is Rebecca Wagner. She's a bartender. She does a lot of crafting.
That was Ashley Haight, and this is Ruth Oliver.
We wanted to have people from different... We didn't want to have all actors or people who were performers all the
right.
time.
Or all accomplished people that have really figured out their craft. You know, we want to be open to people who are still figuring it out.
Right.
Like me.
We'll have a couple of storytellers from the audience also. I'm looking forward to hearing what other people have to share with us. I was looking at our website. I wanted to talk about the different workshops because there's some great ones. So the first one is disaster preparedness. Mm-hmm. And then there's one on comic making with Robin Bateman. And then there's funding creativity, which is a panel. There will be a poetry workshop and podcasting and aromatherapy and a food swap. Oh, and bike maintenance.
And they go from about an hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You don't have to sign up or anything. You can just show up.
We're participating in a first Thursday. The theme is Paths to the Pacific Northwest. And that will be at the Albina Press on Hawthorne next to the Sapphire. And there's 30 artists. It should be amazing.
To wrap up, I just wanted to say I'm just so grateful that I met all these great Siren Nation ladies. And I just had this, you know, dream of creating an all-lady storytelling night years ago. And then I met these women that were just doing all this great stuff. And it was so inspiring. And they were so willing to help me figure out how to make it happen. I just love them.
December Carson, man. Dynamo. Oh,
seriously. She's amazing.
She really is.
Beth Olson, you, Ruth.
We're all amazing.
Gosh, just so much love. Yeah. I didn't have this great community of women. I didn't know this was out there. I just didn't know. Now I'm telling you, get involved. Talk to people. Don't be afraid. If you have an idea or a dream or something, just make it happen.
Yeah, or tell someone that you want it to happen and maybe they'll be able to help you.
Exactly. Ask for help.
Yeah, that's even better.
Yeah. Admit you don't know everything. Try something new.
As you build the Siren Nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
The Siren Nation Festival takes place until November 15th. Schedule, venue, and price information is all available at sirennation.org. I'm Erin Yankee. Thanks for listening.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:57 a.m. Coming up is the noon headlines, followed by Moving On with your host, the inimitable, and what a guy, Don Jacobson. So keep it locked right here on your community radio. If you're not yet a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. Click where it says Donate Today. And now, this.
And now the KBOO News at Noon for today, Friday, November 6th, 2015. I'm Don Merrill. The Oregonian and KOIN are reporting that a man suspected of being mentally ill was shot this morning in Northwest Portland. The armed man fired two shots, one at the ground, while police were negotiating with him. A special emergency response team was called in, but the unnamed man was killed in a parking lot across the street from Legacy Good Samaritan Hospital.
An Oregon judge is under investigation for refusing to perform same-sex weddings. Marion County Circuit Court Judge Vance Day will appear before the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability on Monday. Judge Day faces six charges, including he let a felon handle a gun, that he lied to investigators, and that he displayed a photo of Adolf Hitler. Day says he's being attacked because of his religious beliefs. In national news, the Obama administration said on Thursday it would sign the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership, but Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, who chairs the Senate Finance Committee, said the administration shouldn't expect Congress to simply rubber stamp the agreement.
Three important considerations will determine whether I can support this agreement. First, the deal must be balanced. Second, I must have confidence that our trading partners will actually live up to the commitments they've made. Third, the agreement must be subjected to a thorough and rigorous congressional review, including in-depth consultation with the administration.
Colorado voters rejected education reforms supported by Charles and David Koch's Americans for Prosperity in recent school board elections. Conservative majorities in the Thompson School District, the state's largest, were replaced with those supported by teachers, parents, and students. The Koch-affiliated groups spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to fight the recall votes, but voters decided the group's influence had to end. In international news, photographer Francesca Moore is commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Union Carbide explosion that caused a cloud of poisonous gas to settle over Bhopal, India, killing at least 18,000 people and sickening tens of thousands. Moore wanted to focus on the human and environmental tragedy and photographed survivors and settings over a two-year period. She originally planned to take 80 photographs but ended up shooting over 200. The exhibit, Facing 30, is at Photo Fusion until December 4th. And finally, London's independent newspaper is reporting that the black box from the crashed Metro jet in Egypt indicate the plane was brought down by an explosion. An Egyptian government official reportedly told ABC News that an explosion is now the most plausible scenario. That's all for the Cable News at Noon for today, Friday, November 6, 2000.